Beta Talk is the voice of the most important frontline health workers around the globe, plumbers. They, along with installers and engineers, are also at the forefront of global warming issues. Beta Talk aims to give them a voice, assisting the industry and enabling them to discuss energy, plumbing and heating topics. Beta Talk with your host Nathan Gambling is sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering, giving you a voice in a global industry.
I'm here today with another podcast, Beta Talk podcast, and I'm joined by Andy, who's otherwise known as Gasman God.
Hello, mate. You're right.
Ian, who's kindly hosting us today.
Hiya.
Ian Forbes Plumbing and Heating, and Lee Fisher. And Lee, what's your company called?
Green Albion Limited.
Green Albion. So welcome to the show. And I'm going to kick off first with Andy. Andy, you became very well known on social media. Has social media, do you think, done anything for our industry?
Oh yeah, it's done loads. It's done loads. To begin with, it's brought everybody together in a way that it's difficult to explain. But you know, I'm out there working on my own, and it can be a bit of a lonely world at times. You're out there on your own every day. You don't speak to too many people. And if you've got a bit of a problem, you know, now you can just ask someone, and you'll get an answer pretty quickly, hopefully.
And we all got to know each other on social media.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
And like you just said there, people can share. I mean, one of the things I'm interested in is how people learn, and all you engineers are sharing so much knowledge, and that never used to sort of really happen as much.
No, it didn't. There was no way of it happening, was there? I mean, you know, it was, I wouldn't have known Lee over there, because he's in Lincoln, and I'm in London. You know, he might have a certain speciality that he knows about that I don't know about, and now I can ask him and get the answers.
We'll find it one day.
We're all viewed as competitors as well to some degree, weren't we? Whereas,
yeah,
I don't see any of you, I wouldn't see any of you as competitors, not in a, that you're not as good as me, but if you were in this area doing an install, I'd want to meet up with you and have a beer,
well, yeah,
a bit of breakfast.
You'd come around for a cup of tea.
And have a bit of breakfast, sure. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It'd be like, I probably would be wounded if you didn't, do you know what I mean? Not that, you know, you're in my district out working, you just, yeah, I'd want to meet up with you.
But there is groups of lads on social media that live close to each other as well, though, isn't there?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so that, yeah, they are in competition and are nearby, and they all seem to help each other, yeah, out. It's sort, yeah, of, you know, it's breaking down barriers.
I think that's probably the biggest thing that's come out of it. It, you know, it's social. It's called social media, yeah, for a reason. Yeah. It does help most of the time. It helps most of the time become social.
Because it is a tough, I think one of the things customers don't really understand, this is a tough industry we're in. You know, all you guys out there with this incredible knowledge doing all this stuff, and I don't think we're as valued as much as probably we should be, are we? What do you reckon, Lee?
Yeah, it's, you know, like you say, it's I'm not very sure where to go with that answer. But yes, I agree, you are right. I think another thing on the social media, it's brought down barriers between manufacturers and installers. You know, it's not just the polished front end that's presented anymore. I think there's a lot more information sharing two-way, you know, and engineers are helping manufacturers and vice versa, and that's a really good thing. I do think it's fairly unique as well, the plumbing industry. I doubt that there's this community.
Yeah, I don't believe, from what I see, I don't think there's a you know, there's a group of plumbers on Twitter, if you like. I don't think there's a group of carpenters.
No.
And I don't think there's a group of painter and decorators.
No.
The electricians, you know, they're coming along.
Yeah.
But definitely plumbers do lead the way in this respect, yeah.
Well, I think we have so much to talk about, don't we? Going back to the knowledge you guys have to know is incredible, isn't it? And there's so many different niches within the industry. All you guys are gas, but we've got the whole thing about water regulations, the knowledge about renewables, which is obviously a hot topic at the moment. We're talking about performance testing on Twitter the other day. Lee, this is something that's very close to your heart, isn't it? Performance testing on buildings,
yep.
The EPC. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, a story you've known, Nathan. It was something that happened a while ago. I was doing a landlord safety inspection, and I come across a tenant who was a young single mum. And she had an old bat boiler going to a water cylinder, and the three-way valve had been bypassed. So it had been took out the electrical wiring. To have hot water, she had to just switch it on. What the boiler did naturally was, you know, go around the water cylinder and a little bit would go around the radiators. When I got there, the water coming out of the taps, it was 87 degrees and her house was freezing. And she was spending £160 a week on gas. And this is a single mum. And I sat there and I had to sign the form saying it was safe. And I've spent 2.5 years since then fighting, which, you know, we are starting to make some progress to say it's not just about safety. And I do, you know, what we call a functionality testing. I think it's crucial to an EPC and to the way we do. It'd be so easy to walk around with a thermal imaging camera, stick a socket tester in, just to say, yes, these sockets work, this boiler actually turns on, these radiators get warm.
That was
Nathan's
phone, definitely,
by the way.
That was Nathan's
phone. Everyone else is turning theirs on now.
He's actually in charge. He's supposed to be running the show.
Shocking. Phones out of the area, please.
So the energy performance certificate is supposed to ascertain how efficient a property is. Do you think it does?
No, because it doesn't account for performance. It genuinely doesn't. It accounts for what's hung on the wall, what date stamp is inside those windows. It doesn't tell you whether the window's shut. So, yeah.
Who enforces this, though?
Well, yeah, that's exactly that. At the minute, no one. I think there's two bodies which mainly oversee energy performance certificates. They have the tick box guidelines, you know. So if you're an EPC assessor, you have to take pictures to evidence. Yes, that's the loft insulation. And it's all about covering your backside. And that's it. You've got to prove that you've done the right checks and you've took the picture of the boiler. But yeah, there's nothing in place to say it works.
Going back to the boilers, so you guys are installing boilers all the time. I mean, do you think boilers are better than what they were when we all started back in the day?
Well, they certainly haven't got the longevity in them that the boilers that Andy fitted in the 60s. there's very few boilers today that will last 30-40 years.
This is one of the questions I've always brought up, is although they burn less gas, so they're more environmentally friendly, they don't last half the time.
Yeah.
So whereas you used to have a boiler that was made and would last 30 years, now they last, let's say, 15. So you need two boilers in that time. So that's two sets of manufacturing, two sets of it being delivered in a diesel van, two sets of it being fitted, and the old one's got to go to be recycled, which will cost money. I'm going down your road here. But what is more environmentally friendly?
Yeah.
An old boiler that burns more gas but lasts longer. I don't know.
Well, the textbook figures, you know, some of like the classics and stuff, they're the high 70s, the 78-80% efficient. Obviously, that sounds new. And the ones we're fitting now are supposedly 90%. So you're not talking huge savings, like you say, to the fact you're then replacing them. Some last 6 years at the minute, as we well know.
So what is the answer? I don't know. No doubt someone could sit down and work it all out, but...
So why, I mean, we have a very interesting boiler, and I keep repeating this, we have a very interesting boiler market if you compare us to the rest of the world. In on the continent, their boilers do seem to be lasting longer. I don't think they have the corrosion problem that we're having at the moment. We've had it for about 3 decades. What can the manufacturers do you think? I mean, obviously social media, we've talked about, they're actually now listening to us, so this is something we're actually sort of banging on about a little bit with them. I mean, do you think some of them are going to come to the fore with this and start?
I think the conversations, you know, the again, thanks to social media, the dots are starting to be joined up. You know, so we talk about using things like low-loss headers and that. You know, people fit TRVs because it makes your house more efficient, But what you've then got is a massive 30-35 kilowatt boiler potentially only going around one or two radiators, and the boiler's cooking itself.
Yeah.
So the waterways within it scale up, and the boiler breaks down because you've fitted something to be efficient. But it's the whole package. It's looking at everything together. You know, I think you could be cynical and think, you know, if any of us owned a boiler manufacturing company, it would be great to think everyone we sell will get sold again in 10 years' time. But, and that's why there needs to be, I think, powers and policies in place to take profit, profit not to be the front runner in this industry now, you know, the more important things.
I want to talk a little bit about training. So I'll come to you, Ian, first. So you did your training with British Gas, is that right?
No. I was City and Guild. I worked for a local company.
Right.
Did my work experience with them and they offered me a job. I took it and just done my City and Guild. So I had they were a good company to work for, did a very varied amount of work. One of the jobs I did as an apprentice was we fit a kidney dialysis machine in somebody's house.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite a good job to do, so I did some good work with them.
So we're talking backflow there.
Yes, I mean, obviously water regs were a lot different back then. I mean, when I come into the trade, they weren't, I know they're sort of like governed under one sort of like main book now, but back then it was different authorities really made up their own rules and regulations, you know, and I know some of them still do. I had a good conversation with somebody yesterday about bottom entry ball valves, funny enough. So the water regs were not, and I still think are not really adhered to by many people.
It's an interesting one. I mean, you guys as gas engineers, I think what happened was when gas became the primary fuel, and obviously then we had all the training centres setting up to sort of train people into gas. And once you became a gas engineer, you sort of wrote. I mean, the best engineers I know are the gas engineers, but some of the worst engineers I know are the gas engineers, because some of the ones that have been taught, some of them don't know the war regs, and it's probably just a case of just jetting up on a few regs. But and once again, I think that's industries. I don't think I'd never blame the engineer. I think industry has just been so focused on sales, including training. Training is a revenue stream, and that's been focused on sales. And unfortunately, the engineers aren't getting trained properly, perhaps in water regs. Lee, where did you do your training?
Oh, I barely did. I'm the non-standard route to industry. So my dad's a plumber. So I used to work with him through school, college, uni. Did it on the side to earn the money while wanting to pursue other things. And then about 7 years ago, came back to the industry working with my dad. And then I did a crash course, a gas one. But, you know, for me, it was... I didn't leave that course feeling underqualified. I think I needed the bit of paper to back up the knowledge I already had. You know, a lot of lads who was on it were ex-military, you know, so they'd never, you know, picked up a tool before we got there, but they had to do an extra couple of weeks training. I mean, the format of that course in itself, it was... We was there for 5 weeks. You then had to go away, do a portfolio of 30 jobs, which took me 6 months, signing them all off with the regs and that, and then you go back in for another 2 weeks. So it took, you know, 7 months, and that was meant to be, you know, 7 months just for the gas qualification. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then working on my own, then obviously you sort of get the knowledge. Twitter has been great for opening my eyes up, you know, to things like deaeration and the more technical advanced side of plumbing and heating and engineering, you know.
That's another thing that they don't teach. They don't really teach you much about systems, do they? So unless... I mean, I think the crash courses aren't so bad for some people if they're willing to learn. You know, they're willing to learn and they've got an opportunity for being out there with people as well. I mean, we talk about the portfolio. The portfolio, in my opinion, is a flawed system, because you're going to get places that will do it very, very stringently, and then it is sometimes simply a case of, if you stand here, I'll take a photograph, we'll stick it in the portfolio, job done.
Yeah.
And that's actually not fair on the engineer, because then they actually go out there in the real world and probably don't know really what they're doing. How did you do your training, Andy?
I joined British Gas.
Yeah.
When I was 16, left school one day, British Gas the next day, pretty much. Yeah, 3-year apprenticeship, college, on the tools with an engineer, and at the British Gas Training Technical Centre at Daniel Kent Road.
So you've seen sort of loads of changes then, I suppose, in the industry, haven't you?
Yeah, tons. I mean, after I qualified, I went on to doing like servicing and breakdowns for a couple of years. Then I moved on to the installs. We were still installing like back boilers, open flow boilers, all over the place. Yeah, definitely.
Do you enjoy installs? Today's, would you prefer doing install or?
I've always been an installer. Yeah, I much prefer doing the install side of stuff. Yeah, getting the hands dirty. And there's something to see at the end of the day, isn't there, or at the end of the week?
Now I'm going to dare ask the question: what's your favourite border?
I'd probably go for a Valent 418 Ecotec Plus at the moment.
So that's your install, and then have you got like a favourite you've been servicing for years, like sort of ones that you consider you can go there?
Well, to servicing wise, I mean, Lee mentioned them earlier. You can't go wrong with an Ideal Classic.
No,
absolutely. But I mean, I used to have one in the old house.
Have you still got the roll-up seal in your van?
Absolutely, the best, most rock solid boiler that's ever been produced, and nothing's ever going to come close to that. It's there. It's the best one.
Glowworm Space Saver is probably a close second, but that was balanced fluid. So although the Classic did have a balanced fluid version, but yeah, they are a great.
I think the Classic was the pinnacle of all boys. Nothing could ever be that good ever again.
And was it like late '80s, early '90s? Literally every new build had a Classic, didn't it? Yeah, and we still come across them now. You know,
we did them all over the place. Just Ideal Classic after Ideal Classic. I could still do them now with my eyes shut.
I'll tell you what, though, really there's not many of the older engineers, and some of the young ones love a Baxi Bermuda backboiler service as well.
Yeah. Oh, I don't mind a Baxi 552, good boiler.
Absolutely love them. When I see one of them, I've got one left on my books, and it is nice to actually go there and put the dust sheets down.
Yeah, take it
and get the flue brushes out, and burner out, and it's
a proper job, isn't it?
Yeah, you feel
a proper job.
I know a lot of modern boilers, a lot of them are only an analyzer check. I know you've got to check the expansion first, but primarily it's just an analyzer. It's a visual inspection analyzer check. But the old back boilers, you feel like you've earned your money there when you've done that. And there aren't many, as I say, the older generation that I talk to now that don't like a Baxi back boiler service.
I'll take it on for now.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
I think as a homeowner as well, it's a good use of space. I just you know, get it out the way behind your fire. Yeah. It just makes great sense.
Absolutely.
Yes.
A good idea.
And what's obviously we're all old enough to remember sort of the emergence of the combi or the big sort of.
Are you making out with all the same age?
I was looking at Lee there thinking no. So yeah, I mean, Andy, Ian, and I have definitely saw how the rise of the combi has really taken over in this country.
I mean, when I first started doing installs, we wouldn't do a great deal of combis, not many, and they were big old pods and Jaguar or Puma or something. It was called, huge old thing. We wouldn't do a lot of them, but yeah, obviously in the last 20 years, certainly it's combi a lot of the time. Yeah.
And do you like them? Or, I mean, from an installer's point of view, do you like them?
Yeah, of course.
Do you think do you think they're getting overused?
Sometimes, but they do tick a box for a lot of the customers. I mean, what I think, no matter what we talk about within the industry between certain people, the customer wants what they want. Mm. You know, they want that extra space. They want the boiler sticking up in the loft. They want to make that airing cupboard into a shower room and stuff like that. Because property is so expensive, the space within it becomes so valuable. Yeah. So if you've got boiler in the kitchen, cylinder in the airing cupboard, tanks in the loft, if you can combine that, they want that. And whether it's not the most efficient use of their gas that they're paying for.
Absolutely.
You know, but that's what they want.
I've said there's loads of people in the past, but customers want two things. They want hot water coming out of their taps, and they want to be warm. And they really don't care about how they get there.
How shiny the pipes are in the air. We all like it. I'm proud of my pipe.
Can I admit, I never used to shine my pipes.
I didn't pre-Twitter.
I only shine my pipes because of Dennis Hollingworth.
Yeah.
And I definitely wasn't going to shine them if I was lagging them.
that's what customers want. You could put a boiler on the wall upside down. They don't know. They haven't got a clue. I mean, as long as the rads are straight and the pipes aren't too bad, they really don't care about the rest.
I think you've hit on a good point there. Customers don't know, and this is something, I've did some videos with Rated People now. I know the people at Rated People, they're quite passionate, but like I had to say to them, none of the schemes like theirs can actually do what they want to do. There's no way on earth can a customer rate you three guys around this table, your competence. They can rate your politeness, punctuality, and your tidiness. They would not, it'll work, It's like if I needed a computer program built or a website, you know, it might look flashy, it might do exactly what I wanted it to do, but it might crash in 5 years' time because someone didn't build the back end how I needed it. I'd never know. And it's like us, you know, the consumer does not know what a good, competent job is.
No, I think they can see if it's really poor.
Yeah.
Well, you'd hope they could do that, but look at some of the stuff you see. I mean, you know, I mean, there was a picture of a gas pipe running across a kitchen floor. When I say across it, on top of the tile, on one of the forms the other day, and it's like, I mean, I have a radiator that's 1 millimetre off a level, and the customer pulls it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you get all stuff like that, and they, when you see that, it's like, how? Why would you accept that? But they do, because the end product, what they want, as Andy has said, is heat and hot water, and they want it done as cheaply as possible, because they don't care about expensive boilers, expensive controls. They like nice kitchens, they like nice bathrooms, they like nice cars, but that side of it, they don't care.
You do get some. You do get the odd one or two that care, and they're interested, and they ask you about what you're doing and why and stuff like that. But on the whole, 95% of them, they give you the keys, you do the job, they come home at the end of the day, pay you, and that's it.
I think it's a telling symptom of the industry as well. It shows you, like, the consumers don't know what's best, but a lot of engineers don't. Yeah. And that's where the industry's failed at the minute. You know, there are genuinely a lot of engineers still commenting on pictures. Why have you fitted two filters? What's that on the floor?
Yeah.
When people are fitting DA-rators. And for me, you know, as Nathan knows, I'm passionate about researching that. There should just be a best practice.
What the fuck's going on here?
Hold on.
Stop recording. Oh, bored. You did press record, didn't you?
Yeah. But,
technical.
Was you going to edit this, Nathan? You're going to cut a few bits out.
It's
just got tired.
I think if you just wobble that every now and then.
We had a little technical
issue. Yeah, we just, you know.
No one was actually worried apart from me.
No, we saw the screensaver pop up.
Let me end, he guessed where it goes here, because he actually...
a bit of divine intervention sorted that one. Yeah, so the industry as a whole, having good, solid research, we should know changing an old cylinder to an unvented will save you this. It's going to cost that, save you this. And we should know, like, I'm certain there's a tipping point where a cylinder becomes more efficient than a combi on your water usage. But I do not know that water usage. And people expect me to have that knowledge as a heating engineer. And that's why, again, I think it's because profits have come first.
And the industry hasn't got this knowledge, has it?
Yeah, because nobody's funding real research in houses and actually comparing these things. And it's an industry that does very well out of things being replaced. And it's also overseen by people who do very well out of us burning a lot of gas. People do very well out of homeowners wasting energy.
Yeah. I mean, there's something Rob says, it's about, you know, we've got an energy wastage crisis that rather than sort of what is sort of bandied about in the news. And the other thing is, we're at the forefront of solving that. So industry really needs to get behind its engineers, because we're the ones that are going to be rectifying it or putting in the renewables that people are talking about. Talking about renewables, what are our sort of opinions on renewables, Ian?
To be honest, I'm probably the worst to ask, because I had buried my head in the sand on this a number of years ago when solar first started coming out. I looked at it a little bit, but I looked at the cost to install it, to the repayment cost, and it was basically like a 10-year repayment cost and a 10-year lifespan on the solar. So it was not something that I wanted to get involved with. I know it's something that now that I've still got a few years left in the industry that I'm going to have to start addressing. Luckily, there is lots of training out there if you're prepared to look at it. I mean, I know Valiant do quite a bit of training on it. You know, as it happens, I'm actually at Valiant next week doing some training. Their training centre is really good. So
yeah, you got Craig at Valiant, who's very good with the renewables.
Yeah, well, I'm quite fortunate because the Cambridge training centre it's not that far from me. It's only about a 40-minute drive. So, but yeah, it's something that I know I've got to look into. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to my controls. I've sort of like caught up on Open Firm and EBUS controls over the last year, whereas I was basically using on off time switches basically, which I know is not good for the system at all.
I bet every one of us has fitted an Open Therm controller next to an Open Therm boiler and not bothered with them wires.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I've done it quite a lot. And I'm trying now, and I'm going back to those jobs to stick it in if possible. Just because, you know, again, it's back to the knowledge being out there. The benefits of these things. It's just...
So we talked about value. I mean, so I think some of the manufacturers are sort of really getting used to the idea. They've really got to start pushing training, good quality training.
Yeah.
Obviously, it helps them as marketing their brand, but obviously it's going to help the engineer as well. You know, because we do have to keep learning. It's this industry does change quite a bit, doesn't it? And there's sort of new techniques that we all sort of tend to... I mean, when I first trained, you can go years and years and years without ever knowing any other bits and pieces of knowledge, unless you actually prepare to go out there and get a book from the library and read about hydronics or something. But now we are lucky enough to sort of, with the internet, we've got information out there, we've got companies now sort of being a bit more prepared to actually sort of train the engineer. What's the sort of training you have been on, Andy, recently?
What have I done? What training have I done? I've been down to the Valen Training Centre. It's probably the last one I did last summer.
And where was it?
Farnborough.
Right.
Yeah. I can't remember what boilers it was on now, but it was on one. I've got to go and do the renewable stuff as well. I have done the renewable stuff in the past. I did it about 10 years ago with another boiler company. Nothing much ever came of it back then. Obviously now it's starting to come along more. It's definitely something that I'll look at, although I don't think it will, at my age, slightly younger than Ian. I don't think it will affect me too much. I'll probably be doing this for another 20 years. There's still going to be 20 years worth of gas boilers out there.
Yeah, just service.
But my kids, you know, I've got three boys, hopefully one of them might take it up, and they're definitely going to need to be doing renewables. So if I learn it now, I can tell them about it. And
are they going to follow you into the industry?
It's up to them, really. Yeah. I mean, I hope three boys, I hope one of them is going to say, can I come to work with you, Dad?
Yeah.
But, you know, I really don't know.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think the training issue, one of the things I do worry about renewables is it's. I think you're going to get marketing companies that are just going to hard sell to consumers. You've got to have this, you've got to have this ground source heat pump, you've got to have this air source heat, and these things are going to be put in so shoddily.
Well, that's what happened with all that solar stuff, wasn't it? I mean, they were frying panels up on roofs left, right and centre and not giving a shit, basically. Yeah. They were just taking money and running. You know, the solar panels all over the place that don't work.
Mm.
But we still, as you know, I'm sure you guys as well have heard stories about people who've had a heat pump fitted and it doesn't work and the house is never hot and they've had it ripped out. Yeah. And then, so, you know, again, I don't have the confidence and know that the right answer's out there at the minute. And you see it again with the argument on Twitter and stuff where there isn't an answer. Because, you know, you hear these people with electricity bills rocketing.
Yeah.
Because they fitted on what they thought were renewable and then it's using loads of electricity that comes from burning gas at the minute.
Yeah.
it's a very hard one to solve. I mean, one of the good things I've noticed on Twitter as well as sort of making sort of a unit or a good group for us all to sort of engage with, we are getting people, I think, listening to us from sort of from the lobbyists to policymakers, trade media. I think they're now starting to engage with the engineering, which they should do, because like I say, we are probably the most important part of the puzzle. And I think they're now starting to listen to us, which is good.
You might not know they're there, but they're always watching what's going on.
And I think they watch you and I, Andy.
I don't know why they would watch me.
I mean, I'm debating whether we actually go there with that topic.
I think we should leave that one.
we'll leave that one.
But no, they, I know that people, because I've spoken to people in the past, and they said, yeah, we watched what was going on. We saw what happened. We saw
what your catchphrase? I am watching.
I'm watching you. So they are, you know, they don't comment, but they do. They do see what's going on. They do keep abreast of the situation, and sometimes they might speak up. But yeah, they're always watching.
I do find it very hard for some of the people though that are up there in certain positions to actually speak out on social media, because it can get taken out of context.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very difficult to actually, I mean, we've all probably done it. We've wrote replies to comments, or we've wrote comments on certain things and then deleted that comment and then wrote it again and deleted it and wrote it. And because firstly you think, well, I don't want to get in an argument with these people, but they are wrong 100% in what they're saying, but I don't want to get in an argument with them. So it's sometimes
I've got a rule of when I'm doing a reply on a tweet like that, I'll I'll tweet, I'll write it down, I'll read it back to myself, and then I'll put it into my drafts, like save tweets, wait a minute or two, I'll open it again, I'll read it back to myself again, and then I'll either make a choice of tweeting it or not tweeting it. And my absolute underlying rule is, if in doubt, don't tweet it out. Just don't bother, just leave it.
That's good advice, actually.
You know?
Yeah, because it's sometimes it's just not worth the hassle.
No.
But other times, trying to, you know, explain the regulations and rules on a tweet that's only composed
280
characters, it's impossible.
It can be hard. Yeah,
it can be very, hard. Very difficult. I mean, it's better now than when it was when I first went 140. It was like, you know, because you had those tweets that were like one of 10.
Yeah.
You know, and they get all jumbled up. So no, it is difficult that side. So they probably don't say a lot because they don't want to get trapped basically, because it is quite easy to trap somebody.
Yeah.
On social media with good words.
Yeah, it does, on the whole, it does give you a voice. People are watching, people are listening.
When you first came onto social media, because obviously you assumed this sort of the what would I call it?
Persona
of Gas Man God. Yeah. And obviously it was an anonymous. Lots of people did know you, obviously, your mates.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Oh, man, how long have you got? I've told loads of people this one. I keep it as brief as I can. I was on Twitter anyway, had my own account on Twitter, knew a few people. Ian was one of them. He's been around a long time.
From the beginning.
And there was a lot of work on there that was really, really bad, really poor. And people were proud of it. And one day, me and a mate were just having a little chat together, and I said, what we need is some sort of like character that's anonymous that can call these people out. So sort of went away and thought about it, and I said, what we need is like a god type character. And then I've got to give credit to my wife, because she actually came up with a name, and she'll kill me if I don't say this. She went, why don't you call it Gas Man God? And I was like, oh yeah, that worked. And obviously I didn't know at the time that it was going to work, so I set the account up, called it Gas Man God, and you know, it went from there really.
Brilliant. I mean, obviously, because when I first joined Twitter, I think it was when the campaign was going on, that you sort of a massive part of that, helping rallying engineers together to sort of do a bit of a U-turn with what GasSafe wanted to do, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they wanted to bring in basically like a sort of secondary level of GasSafe. So you're GasSafe and I've paid some extra money, and so I'm safer than you. We said, well, hang on a minute, you know, we're all GasSafe, there can only be one standard, so let's see if we can do something about it. And you know, we didn't expect much to come of it. I mean, Ian was involved at the time as well. We basically did it to be a little bit of a thorn in their side, kick up a little bit of a stink, and we just thought, you know, they're the big boys, they're just going to steamroller over us. So we arranged a little bit of a email campaign,
and it worked, didn't it?
It worked.
It was hilarious.
It was good to see.
Superb.
From my perspective, it was like, you know, wow, engineers sort of joining together, rallying together. Going back to that idea of maybe a tier system, because as we know, once you get your GasSafe card to consumer, we all know it doesn't. There are different levels, very, very different levels of who knows what.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, obviously, from when I was looking at that campaign, I thought, well, actually, I hate the idea of all you guys getting charged extra money, because that's just stupid.
Yeah.
But is there a system maybe where, so someone like you that's got masses of experience, Andy, how do you differentiate yourself from someone that's just maybe doing it for a year, gone on a course, very, very passionate about learning, so they're learning loads and loads and loads of stuff, but they're obviously vastly different to you. They're going to walk into a house, they're going to look at a boiler and go, well, I don't know anything about that particular boiler, what do I do here? But they're still gas safe.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the answer of how you solve that problem. Mm. Maybe make the qualification slightly harder.
One thing I've argued about on this, obviously because I have done the fast track route, so I am a bit biased on it, but everyone learns at different rates. Do you know what I mean? You can't say it has to take X amount of years.
Yeah.
I've told Nathan before a story at uni where I had a job in a bar, and the main student night used to finish at 3 a.m. That lecture on a Wednesday morning, I never went to. For the full term, night before the exam, I read the book cover to cover, and I got 98% on that exam. broke the university record, and they said this module had been running for years. And I didn't go to one of the classes. Anyone can learn at different rates. Exactly. Now, what I would suggest with that, with the gas safe, because I think it's the only solution, is a provisional. So that you can do the quick course, you can do your apprenticeship or whatever, but you can't then set up your own company until you've done X amount of time. So you can work alongside someone, you can work for a company, so but you can't set up your own business after a 5-week course.
I mean, ultimately, you, like many, as you've said, you did the fast track course. But you also did an apprenticeship as such with your
dad. Because I've done the time.
You know, so you were learning the, because one of the things a fast track course can't teach you, it can't teach you how to solder, it can show you how to solder, but it can't teach you how to solder. And you picked up that knowledge through working with your dad, bending pipes, using a drill, using the spirit level. You know, the basics is what you need to learn, and that's something that the fast track courses can never ever give you. So you had that.
I love the fact I learned to soldering the outside elbows on blow offs.
Yeah.
That was that was all I was allowed to do. When I was 16, probably, he first let me solder those. I was allowed to do the external blow off return on the first couple of jobs before he let me loose on a water pipe. That's great.
It's an interesting thing, this whole thing about... I mean, I tend not to use the word fast track because I think it's very ambiguous. I mean, I've taught diploma courses, I've taught apprentices. Now, I've taught apprentices who I know... So they're doing a 4-year apprenticeship, but I know they go back... So they learn all the theory in college, but they go back to the companies they're working for and they're doing some very rubbish stuff because the companies they're working for don't know too much, if you know what I mean. So they're learning bad practices. Where I've taught people that have come out of the army, that have repaired tanks under fire, have lived in probably 4 or 5 homes themselves, they know building fabric, they go on this course, they get very passionate about learning, especially like nowadays with social, and within a few years, they're brilliant, you know, they really are. And,
it's a certain sort of person.
I think it comes down to the person. There's all, in anything in nature, there's different personalities. There's good people out there that are really competent, but just couldn't give a shit about the customer, and aren't doing a good job. You've then got people that want to do a good job, but getting undercut by this thin slice of people that aren't kosher. And so I think it does come down to personality, doesn't it?
When I'd done my apprenticeship, we had 2 guys from the army come through there as well. They'd done the 3-year apprenticeship in a year. Mm. But they were there every day of the week doing it. So
I think someone out of the army, discipline, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think if you've got to be able to demonstrate that you light as knife, you can use a drill, like the training centre I go to, one of the guys that used to run it, he used to fix the refueling aeroplanes. He worked on the jet and the engines on them, which is basically a very, very, very complicated boiler. it puts fuel in one end and it puts a flame out the other end. And a lot of the guys doing the course there, doing the training with him, because I always do the training when I redo my acts, because I just quite enjoy doing it, they don't like him. They never liked him. I got on really well with him, because I'm thinking what he's teaching us here is nothing to what he actually knows. Mm. And he was quite a knowledgeable guy, do you know what I mean?
Have any of you had apprentices?
Not as I've traded for myself, but I've had a couple when a company I used to work for. Had about 4 or 5 go through the company. One really was only any ever good. His brother was in the trade as well. Still speak to Lewis. We had a few that got into it because their parents wanted them to get into it, because they see it as being a good money earner, but never really.
Literally exactly the same. When I was working for companies, had apprentices. Again, one, Ian. Amazing apprentice. Yeah. He was absolutely superb. He was always on time, asking me questions. He asked me for homework at the end of the day, which is, he was desperate to learn. All he wanted to do was fit boilers.
What I think is a shame in trading is there's no incentive for you guys to take someone on.
No.
I mean, no. I'm involved in this game, and the money, and there's a lot of money, there's a lot of funding that gets drawn down, and it's going to colleges, it's going to awarding bodies. Now, let's say someone said to you, Andy, look, I'll give you 10 grand for this year. Will you train this young person up? Would you do it?
If they gave me 10 grand?
Yeah.
To cover the costs,
exactly.
It's going to cost.
And look at all that knowledge you could pass over to that young
absolutely.
Person. There's no way that young person within a year would be able to learn that in a college.
No.
No way. Doesn't matter whether they get a, bit, a certificate at the end of it either.
It would have to, for the first year, it would have to pretty much not cost me anything. To be honest. Because you're not going to make anything out of them in a year. They're going to just be heartache. Because they're going to be turning up late on Facebook, on their phones. And not all of them. But, you know.
No, and they're going to slow you down.
And teach them everything from where every tool is in the back of the van to what every fitting is to how to speak to customers to everything. You're going to spend, it's going to cost you time. You know, it's time.
And
it's time
but if you were actually getting paid for that, you know, to a point where you wouldn't lose money, you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, of course.
You'd enjoy teaching that young person.
And you wouldn't expect to make a profit out of them. But if my costs were covered, then yeah, of course.
But that's what we do. We do make a profit out of people that are training, whether it's the mature students going on courses, whether it's competency schemes. You know, we've got a big, big issue with competency schemes in this country. It's a revenue stream. Which has created, I think, some problems. You can get off tech very quickly, you can get gas safe very quickly now, you can get your water safe within half a day, you can get your unvented within half a day. And it, does that really mean someone's competent once they've got that certificate? Well, I know for a fact they're not, because I've assessed them. You don't. I mean, going back to the gas safe, if I was living abroad and someone I really cared about rang me up and said, you know, well, can you recommend an engineer? I wouldn't say go on the gas safe site and look who's near your area, because I wouldn't know how good they were.
You
know, I'd ring up someone I knew in that area, because you don't know how safe someone is.
Well, the ACT exam is it's
easy.
You know, and I've done it 5 times now, and it's exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I go to the same training centre, and they show you the same whole. And it's got the same.
Do they still put wire wall in there?
Yeah, they put wire wall in the injector, and they show you a chimney, and it's still got the same Sainsbury's carrier bag shoved up the chimney blocking it. It's nonsense, isn't it?
Do you have to revise ventilation every 5 years? Because that's the thing I think I'd lose.
No, I'm
I need a refresher.
I mean, the whole ACS thing, you know, multiple guests.
You get 3 goes,
You get 3 goes in.
And then you have to a verbal afterwards to talk.
And if you can't get, you know, choosing one right out of 4, I mean, you can normally knock 2 of them out of the way.
Oh, straight away.
Because they're so ridiculous answers. So you've narrowed it down to 2 to begin with.
It's like positive and negative questions. I class them as A or B, yes or no, don't. I never read the question. I never read the answer, sorry. I always read the question, then just answer a more positive on the first go. Then when the paper comes back, it's got to be negative. So basically, you can argue that's cheating, but it's not. It's just, I'm not.
You've learned how to play the system.
I've learned how to take a test.
Yeah. That's how they assess it. Yeah.
So you can give me a positive and negative exam on anything and give me 2 goes at it, and I'll get 100% after the second go, because it's the way I play it. You know, it could be brain surgery, whatever, and it's that's the problem with the system.
Just go back to, I've just had an idea pop in my head, which is unusual, but going back to this thing about, like, let's say someone, a young person went with Andy and they're going to learn incredible stuff. Could that be sponsored by, I mean, some of the manufacturers in our industry are, you know, billion-dollar companies. Could they sponsor sort of a cohort of young people to go with the top engineers so that they pay the top engineers? I mean, they're all pumping lots and lots of money into marketing. But, you know, let's say a manufacturer took 20, 30 young people and picked some really, really good quality engineers and said, look, is the apprentice, is a load of money, teach them properly.
Yeah,
would that work?
It was potentially, but I mean, I said...
What incentive would they have?
Yeah, they'd want something for their money, wouldn't they?
The fact that they're training up the next generation. And the others aren't.
They'd want to be guaranteed
brand loyalty.
Some sort of return. They probably would, on the whole, it probably would work. They probably would get brand loyalty. Let's say Company X says we'll pay these 30 kids to learn. 20 of those kids, probably would. Probably would carry on using brand X. 10 of them would go elsewhere.
And that's another problem with apprentices as well. Is obviously, you train an apprentice up for 3 years.
Yeah.
He gets out of his time and then he decides he wants... Because he's very easy to go and set up by himself now. He goes and sets up by himself. So all that money you've invested in them...
Yeah. But that's... I mean, with Ian, my top apprentice, he was quite open about that. He said, you know, I want you to train me. I'll do another couple of years after that. And then I want to be working for myself. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And he's doing it now. He's got a good company. I'm really proud of him. He's done, you know, done really well for himself, you know. So you accept that that's going to happen.
Yeah. But it's the honesty. He was honest and upfront about it. Whereas when they're not honest and upfront about it, And probably not very good either as well. You know, that's a bitter pill to swallow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, well, I'd like to thank all of you gentlemen for joining me today. We've all had to travel quite far.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Just to clarify, we've all had to travel.
I have, from my couch.
He's travelled from his sofa to the kitchen, which is actually quite a demanding feat for him, we sometimes see on Twitter. And we're all going to tuck into some biscuits now, I think. No, it's been really, really insightful. Thank you ever so much for joining me today. Thank you, Andy.
That's no problem.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
Cheers, gents.
Cheers.
Well, I think that went all right, didn't
it? Yeah, it's good, mate.
Thank you for listening to an episode of Beta Talk. Season 1 has been sponsored by IMI Hydronic Engineering. I've been your host, Nathan Gambling. You can find me on Twitter under the name Beta Teach. You can also find Beta Talk on Twitter. And if you need to contact me, you can use my email, learn@betateach.co.uk. You can also look at the website, betateach.co.uk, to see what's going on over there. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you enjoy future episodes. Thank you.